Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors.
Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
All right, welcome to the show. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network. Online, sportingjournalradio.com, by subscribing to that podcast on iTunes and by using the podcast app on your iPhone. Coming up this week, we're going to talk to Joe Henry. They were catching sturgeon out of kayaks up on the Rainy River. How crazy is that? We're going to find out how it went, how they did, and what other fish they caught while they were up there. We'll also check in with Dean Krebs. He's got the next Outdoor Youth Activity Day that's going to be coming up in Alexandria towards the end of the month here, August 26th. It's free for kids 16 and under. It's a very cool event. And then we've also got Bill Cashmark from Cashmark's Gun and Reel in Montevideo. He's going to talk about getting your gun ready for the waterfowl season, some tips that you can use to keep your gun in working condition throughout the season, and what you should do to it now if you're not out there hunting already like we are in North Dakota for the early Canada goose season. We've been over here for the last couple of days this week. It's been hot. And we'll talk more about how that's been going. Our first guest, though, is Sean Stahl with R&T Calls. We'll talk to Sean here in just a second. This week's show brought to you by Mid-Migration Outfitters, offering guided duck and goose hunts in western Minnesota around that Lac qui Parle area, midmigrationoutfitters.com. Also by Haybale Heights Campground and Resort on Devil's Lake. We're actually going to do some fishing there, and we'll bring the cameras along too. That's going to be Monday and Tuesday on Devil's Lake. So we'll talk more about how that went with Lucas Mertens next week here on the radio show. It's also brought to you by Lake of the Woods Tourism. Find out how you can book your trip to Lake of the Woods at lakeofthewoodsmn.com, whether you want to get up there yet this summer, this fall, or book an ice fishing trip. All right, like I said, our first guest, Sean Stahl, he is in Minnesota for Game Fair. Once again, the second weekend of Game Fair going on down there at the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey. Such a cool event. I haven't been able to make it down there in the last couple of years, and I miss it because it's one of my favorite industry type events, these outdoor events. And of course, it's all about waterfowl hunting, which is my favorite. And Sean, welcome to the show. I'm assuming the waterfowl shows like this are probably some of your favorites too.
Are what?
These waterfowl shows, there's some of your favorite types of shows like this to do, to have to work a booth at.
Oh, yeah. You get to be around everybody that enjoys the sport as much as you do. Sitting around listening to duck and goose calls for 2 days, and ears will start ringing. That's why I couldn't hear you talking.
Oh, yeah,
but,
yeah.
But no, you get around everybody who wants to talk waterfowl, and it's that time of year you're getting all amped up and ready to go, and kind of builds the anticipation and excitement.
Well, I know if your booth is in the same place where it was a couple of years ago when I saw you there up on Waterfowler's Hill up there, it gets a little loud up there.
Yes, it does. Yep, we're located once again up there on Waterfowler Hill, like you said.
Yeah, cool place. Game Fair going on, of course, again this weekend. Now, you started coming up here the last couple of years, but you spend a lot of time in Minnesota anyway, don't you?
Oh, yeah. My dog's in full-time training up here in Mille Lacs with fine line retrievers. So yeah, I get out here quite a bit and pass through and stop. Yeah. Yep.
Well, Sean, I miss Game Fair and I'd like to be there, but I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of enjoying being out here in North Dakota for the early Canada goose season.
Well, I'm telling you what, it's last weekend was a scorcher. It was low 90s, and I'm looking forward to this weekend more than anything, but yeah, it's hard to believe, you know, getting Snapchats and seeing Instagram posts and everything. Everybody's out in North Dakota, not everybody, but a lot of people are out in North Dakota, and they're already chasing after them. And here I am sitting here working a show.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, it was hot out there this week. Not as bad as last weekend, thankfully. Birds have been okay. It's been kind of hit or miss. You're finding small pockets of them. We've struggled to find fields with 100 birds in it. So it's been maybe
just, that seems to be the thing with early season. You find them and they're not bunched up yet. And right. If you do find a couple hundred, they're, you know, in a 200 acre field or 150 acre field, they're spread out across the whole thing in little family groups, and they're just not real receptive this year time of year to being called at and other decoys I've found.
Yeah, so let me ask you that. For guys that are that haven't gone out yet this year for early goose, if they're planning to make a trip, what would you tell them as far as, you know, how you'll call that geese or how you'll set a spread or what you'll look for?
Well, in this early season, it's a lot. I set them a lot looser than I normally would, and I generally don't do a lot of family groups unless it's this time of year. Because, you know, they're still young. You know, the adults obviously are older, but the young ones are young, and they tend to separate a little bit and stay away from each other, avoid confrontation and whatnot. And this early season is really tough in that the food source is everywhere. it's, you know, that hasn't been picked over. You know, there's a lot of these fields that just been picked, so they can find food in just about, you know, everywhere in the field. So I set up loose. I try to leave open spots, try to use just enough decoys to cover up my concealment method. And where I want them, I want it where I want the birds to land. I want it nice and open. And I'm probably not going to call a bunch because I don't want to be real aggressive with them, because, like I say, they're not looking for confrontation when they're, you know, they've got a bunch of young ones this age.
Well, that it's interesting you bring up the word confrontation, because I think a lot of people think, you know, there's some theories about why geese talk to each other so much as they're coming into land in a field when there's, you know, other geese there or decoys or whatever. And some people think it's geese saying, hey guys, come join us. We've got food down here. But
a lot of times I've done a lot of studies where I live. I'm fortunate enough to have a refuge about a mile and a half behind me. I got a nice, like, 6-acre green lawn that I mow, and I get birds coming there all the time, and I can watch them and see different things. And, you know, there's two different types of calling that I generally hear. And it's, one is when there's somebody that's looking for somebody. Either he's lost part of his family off the roost or last night or whatever. And he's calling to find them. It's just generally one bird, and he's calling to them. And the other time is, hey, man, I know you're coming down here, but this is my spot, my turf. Stay the heck away.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that are more aggressive, you know. And I think a lot of times, like when I've watched migrators come over, you know, molt migrators come over that spot, when the geese on the ground hear the molt migrants come across, they're not calling. They don't start calling them. They shut right up. And they just like they're playing, hey, nobody's here. Don't say nothing. We don't want, you know, we don't want them coming here, and just let them fly right on by. But it's the molts that whenever there's a scuffle on the ground, you know, the birds get agitated with each other and start fighting. And if, you know, a group of geese are flying by off in the distance, say they're coming off the roost going somewhere else, or there's some migrators, they hear that noise. And it's almost like they give themselves up. The birds on the ground give themselves up to the birds in the air. And I don't think they're necessarily always talking to each other. So I don't subscribe to one school or the other. Sure. I kind of subscribe to both schools.
Sure. Sure. It's like anything else. You know, you think about how we communicate with each other.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it's, you know, it's like, okay, you're sitting in a restaurant and Joe comes in, and Joe's your buddy. And he might walk in the door and you're like, hey, Joe, over here.
Yeah.
And, you know, then Tommy comes in, and you and Tommy have been, you know, going at it since the playground days. And he walks in, and you might just say, hey, you might just want to stay over there, turn around, walk out the door, or something's going to happen. You know, there's that kind of stuff that goes on.
That's great. There you go. Breaking down the art of calling.
And then there's the third ones that just don't say anything. They just look the other way, and hopefully they go away, you know.
Breaking down the art of calling at geese with Sean Stahl here on Sporting Journal Radio.
Yep. You never knew it'd go that way, did you?
No. You can see him this weekend at Game Fair, RNT. What? Speaking of calling and calls, what's new with RNT, Sean?
We've got a lot of new stuff, and new stuff and old stuff that still works and still good. We've got the old Daisy Cutters, short barrels. We've got the new Mondos. We've got a really good sale on Mondos, $84 for Mondo. That's normally $145. So that's a good, real good, and that's a cut down style call. It's not a new. It's kind of new to the mass market, but it's an old trick that guys used to use with the old D2 calls. They'd swap the barrel and insert around, flip it around, and then modify the tone board and reed. And it produces a sound that's totally, if you're used to a single reed or a double standard single reed J-frame style call, it's going to sound way different and feel way different. But I promise you, the duck, it still sounds like a duck to the real thing, and they like it.
Sean Stahl, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. Are you going to have those at the booth at Game Fair this weekend?
Yes, sir.
Pretty cool. What do you see, you know, the calling, you know, the call market out there is very crowded. What do you see as kind of the next direction that calls are going to go for these companies out there?
That's going to be interesting, because I'm looking for some kind of innovation, you know, to change. There's a lot of the same thing. You know, it's gotten easier to make calls now with the advent and the CNC mills. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are coming out with calls that are basically the same as somebody else's call that's on the market. So we're lacking a little bit of originality, and in some way, shape, or form, there's going to be something come out that's it's going to be original and change the way we, you know, we actually use these calls.
Sure. Sure. All right. Well, when are you going to actually get into the field?
I myself kind of hold off a little bit. I kind of skip past this early season. Ragweed and me are not friends.
Sure.
And so I kind of try to hold off till after the first frost. And I was talking about this earlier with some friends, and you know, it's gotten to the point now where somewhere around the country you can hunt geese, duck, or snows or Canadas from August 15th all the way to March 31st. And in some places you can go up into Canada and hunt to the end of May. So, you know, you don't have that sense of urgency like I had when I first started out, when you had 10 days in September and 30 days in October, and then that was it. You know,
right.
Now you can kind of pick and choose your spots. And I like that a little bit later when the birds start grouping up and they're a little friendlier to the call. And they're pushing on the migration and then even on down to the wintering grounds. Last few years I've really gotten into hunting lessers down south.
That's, oh, cool.
That's fun, getting those old goose natos going.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny, when Minnesota had the August season, we always kind of complained about it. It's too hot. There's too many mosquitoes. Eh, you know, we don't need it. And then it ended, and then we just started going to North Dakota for the August season. I guess we just get
too
nice.
Yeah, as a waterfowl, it's kind of hard to miss out on opportunity, yeah, right? Yeah.
All right.
And we're at a boom time right now.
Yeah.
I mean, we've never had this many birds, and the opportunities that we're afforded and be able to do. I mean, I'm thankful every day to be able to have the job I do and the opportunity I do to hunt these birds. So
I agree. You know,
it's awesome.
You talk to some of the old timers, and they say, you know, the duck hunting is on the decline, and there's no more birds anymore. And I try to show them some numbers.
And here's the old deal is, you know, I run into that all the time, and you're looking at waterfowl are adaptive and they change over time. And as agriculture's changed and housing has changed, where these birds feed and where they rest is different than when they did 50 years ago. And they may have shifted over part of a flyway or just, you know, a few miles over from where you, and if you continue to look at them in your traditional spots, you're probably not going to find them, but that doesn't mean there's not as many ducks here as there ever has been or more.
Absolutely. I'm excited. I think it's going to be a good year. I'm a little disappointed in the Canada goose hatch, and from the sounds of it, the snow goose hatch wasn't very good either, but it's not going to stop me from spending too much time.
We're still going to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right, Sean, thanks for the time here on the radio show. Good luck at Game Fair again this weekend. And where can we see you on TV or find out more about what you got
going on? Yeah, you can catch us on RNTV on the Sportsman's Channel, or you can look us up on, we've got a YouTube channel, RNT Calls. You can check us out there. We've got webisodes up there, and you always catch up on off-season stuff.
Perfect. All right, Sean Stahl, thanks again for being on the radio show, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you. Have a good season.
Dean Krebs is up next with Youth Outdoor Activity Day, plus Joe Henry and Bill Cashmark has tips on getting your gun ready for the waterfowl season. All coming up on Sporting Journal Radio.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
All right, we're back. Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors, from a pickup truck in North Dakota right now for the early Canada goose season. I'm Brett Amundson. Thank you for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, online, sportingjournalradio.com, and also by subscribing to that podcast in iTunes or that podcasts app on your iPhone. All right, coming up in a couple of weeks here in Alexandria is another activity day, another event for youth, getting them involved in the outdoors. And this one has been a big one every year. It seems like it's growing every year as well. And Dean Krebs is going to join us here on Sporting Journal Radio right now to tell us more about it. We've had you on the last few years to talk about it. Dean, are you ready to go for this year?
I think we are. We're planning on a bunch of kids, so.
That's good.
You bet.
That's good. Now, what day is it? It's Youth Activity Day, right? What day is this?
We're always the last Sunday in August, so this year it falls on the 26th.
Okay, and it's put on by Viking Sportsmen and also your Pheasants Forever chapter, right? To run through your list of titles again, because you got a few of them.
So I'm on the Viking Sportsmen Board of Directors, president of Douglas County Pheasants Forever, and then I'm the chairman of the Youth Outdoor Activity Day Committee. So, yeah, a few different hats, but it's all good.
Sure, and that, of course, all deals with what's happening coming up on the last Sunday of August here this year. And so Douglas County Pheasants Forever and Viking Sportsmen. What is Viking Sportsmen exactly?
So Viking Sportsmen is a local conservation organization that really works in the Douglas County, Alexandria area to promote sporting activities to kids and do conservation and fish stocking and all different types of things like that.
Very cool. And obviously Pheasants Forever as maybe more upland focused, but kind of some similar philosophies there. So it's a perfect tie-in. And how many kids have you had at this event in the past, and how many kids do you expect to be there this year?
That's a great question. So the first year, this is going to be our fifth year. The first year, we had no idea what to expect. 542 kids show up, which blew us away. I mean, that's crazy. A first-year event, 542 kids. Well, the next year was even more when we had 1,192 kids show up.
Wow.
And that was like, oh, wow. You know, what do we plan for? Well, the next year, it was 1,811, and then we followed that up last year with 2,180 kids.
Oh, my gosh.
Showed up for our youth day, and that this year we're planning on 2,500 kids.
Nice.
At some point, it's going to plateau, but not it hasn't yet. So.
Well, that's great. I mean, obviously, sometimes growth that happens too fast or rapid expansion, sometimes it's hard to handle that many kids, but I mean it's also hard to be upset when it's being that successful. And it's free for these kids, right? Who's it open for?
So it is free to everybody. We do not allow anybody to get their wallet out of their pocket for any reason. Everything here is free, so the kids are going to be able to partake in, I think we got about 45 different activities for the kids to do. We're going to give every kid a free t-shirt. We're going to give everybody there, parents included, free lunch. We've got thousands of giveaways. So we're giving away 1,000 fishing rods. We're giving away 1,000 duck calls. We're giving away hundreds of birdhouses that you make while you're there, and butterfly nets and BB guns and bows and arrows and all kinds of great stuff.
Is there an age for these kids? Is it open pretty much for everybody?
It's open, we say 16 years and under. You know, once you start getting down into that 3 years and younger, it's a little bit tough. But we do have some activities for the younger kids. One of which is a really neat one is we have a local fisheries company here come out and bring other things in our lake. So that's salamanders and toads and frogs and turtles and all these types of things. And they're sitting in a little kiddie swimming pool, and the kids can go touch them and pick them up and do whatever they want with them. And so we do try and for sure that 4 or 5 year old range, you know, all the way up into 15, 16 years old, where they can go enjoy the trap shooting and archery and rock wall climbing and that type of stuff.
And what are some of the other activities for these kids?
So in addition to the ones I just mentioned, we also have an ATV course, a mountain biking course, a shoot, don't shoot course, which is really neat, which is you kind of go through and determine, is this a safe shot to have or not? We've got tomahawk throwing. That sounds like a lot of fun, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
We've got outdoor cooking. The Girl Scouts put that on for us. The Boy Scouts do a bunch of stuff for us. Shelter building. We got a binocular scavenger hunt. BB gun shooting, crossbow shooting, archery. There's just a ton of them.
Talking with Dean Krebs here on Sporting Journal Radio about the Youth Outdoor Activity Day coming up August 26th in Alexandria. That's at the shooting park in Alexandria, right? That big facility there along the interstate?
It is, correct, yep.
What a great place for that to be held.
That's where they hold the state high school trap shooting tournament as well, so it's a great facility, and it works really great for our event as well. And lots of room to expand and for people to partake in these activities, because some of them take quite a bit of space. You know, like our casting contest, I don't know, about 8 or 10 different stations where the kids can cast into hula hoops and win prizes and that type of stuff. So, yeah, it's a big facility, and we need it all.
It's free. It's open to kids under that age of 16, like that 3 to 16 age in there. It's coming up August 26th. It's the last Sunday in August every year at the Alexandria Shooting Park, Alexandria, Minnesota. And if somebody out there is listening and says, man, I'd like to be involved in that or maybe be a sponsor, do you want to thank some of your sponsors at all, or how can people be a part of it?
Okay, great. So you can go to our website, youthoutdooractivityday.org. That's where you register. There's some information, contact information if you have any questions. I really do need to make a shout out to not all of our sponsors. We've got too many. Our two platinum sponsors, Geneva Capital and Mid-Minnesota Federal Credit Union, have been fantastic. But beyond that, the whole community, it's really boggled my mind how the Douglas County community, and now we're even getting statewide groups to really come and support this in terms of, you know, being there doing an activity for us or providing money. We're getting state and national sponsors. We got an outfitter from Ely coming down to do our camping activity. It's really neat to see how this thing has gotten so big and so popular, and now people are actively seeking us out saying, hey, can we be a part of this? And it's really rewarding to see something, because I know, you know, everybody that does something like this, it's a lot of work to get going, and it's fun, it's a labor of love, but it is a lot of work. And now all of a sudden, it's really cool because people are like, this is so successful, we want to be part of that day. And that's really rewarding for us.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations on the success. Good luck again this year. The Youth Outdoor Activity Day in Alexandria, August 26th. Give us that website again, Dean.
It's youthoutdooractivityday.org. And the other thing you can do is go to YouTube and just look up Youth Outdoor Activity Day. Look at our 2017 video, and that'll give you a really good flavor of what this event is all about. It's a drone video and then pictures of each of the events and that
perfect
stuff. So
very good. Dean Krebs, President, Douglas County Pheasants Forever, and also on the board, Viking Sportsman, and of course Youth Outdoor Activity Day. Good luck. Thanks again for being on Sporting Journal Radio.
All right, thank you so much.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at Lake of the WoodsMN.com.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey, it's Brett Amundson from Sporting Journal Radio and Prairie Sportsman. And if you want to hunt with us this fall, you can. We'll be guiding duck and goose hunts all over western Minnesota around the Lac qui Parle area. Lac qui Parle is known for its goose hunting, and this year should be no different. And with the wet conditions we've had, the ducks are everywhere. If you want to find out more information, go to midmigrationoutfitters.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
We are back, Sporting Journal Radio. Thanks for tuning in to the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors on the Sporting Journal Radio Network. On demand, sportingjournalradio.com. And by subscribing to the podcast in iTunes or by using that podcasts app on your iPhone. I'm Brett Amundson. Going to check in with Joe Henry now from Lake of the Woods Tourism. Joe, you've been up on Lake of the Woods fishing out of what, kayaks the last few days?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been awesome. You know what? We had a little bit of a media event up at Lake of the Woods. We actually had a Hobie invasion on the Rainy River. And tell you what that's all about is Hobie is a company out of California. And they started out making surfboards. And then they made the Hobie Cat sailboats. And then they gravitated into kayaks. And then eventually they gravitated into kayaks. You pedal them to propel them. And they have what's called a Mirage Drive. Has fins underneath it, so when you pedal it, it'll either propel you forward or you can just pull a cord, it'll propel you backwards. So from a fishing perspective, they're cool as heck. I mean, I've never kayak fished before. I'm not, you know, traditional walleye guy. And
sure,
I'll tell you what, man, I was, all BS put aside, I was really impressed. I mean, I couldn't believe how stable it was. I casted the docks along the Rainy River. The wind was pushing me in the docks, so I put it in reverse and just gave a couple pedals once in a while, and it pushed me right down the edge. Gosh, I went, I mean, it was just so cool. I trolled. I pulled crawler harnesses with it along an edge on the river. I trolled crankbaits with it. I went for miles. I mean, it was really neat.
I saw you share a post. Some guy caught a really nice pike out of one of those, and I saw another post on social media about catching a sturgeon out of one of those. And I can't imagine, you know, I'm envisioning what these Hobies look like. And, you know, I don't care what you're in, fishing out of a kayak and you catch a sturgeon or a big pike like that, that's got to be quite an adventure.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell you something. So my, you know, I've always heard of Hobie, and they're part of a GLOW, which is the Association of Great Lakes Outdoor Writers that I belong to, is an outdoor media. And, you know, I belong to this organization and they're a member. And, you know, you hear about this Hobie company and how you can pedal these kayaks, and, you know, my thought is that they'd be, you know, a little bit tippy. I have a canoe, and, you know, I know I got to be careful in a canoe, and it's nothing like a canoe. I mean, it is so freaking stable. I'm not telling you. I mean, I honestly, I did not worry about tipping over at any one point in time. And I was in some, oh, you know, probably 1.5 foot waves at one point. Some charter boats came by, and I had some big wakes coming my way, and it handled it great. And, you know, I'll tell you a funny story. We were, I took this Jason Hauser, who, he's from Illinois, and I took him back, and I said, let's go back to 4 Mile Bay, because nobody goes fishing 4 Mile Bay. So we went back into 4 Mile Bay, and I said, let's work some weed lines, throwing spinner baits, just do a little hunting. So we got some snakes, you know, some small pike and that sort of thing. And I was working a little bit ahead of him, and all of a sudden he's yelling, Joe, I need your help. I got a monster. And he kind of has a little bit of a Southern accent, even though he's in Illinois. And gosh, I went over there, and it was a big fish. It was about 35 incher, which, nice. Gosh, I would have to guess 15 pounder, but had a big head on her, and it whacked a spinner bait. So yeah, you know, we got that in a Hobie, and it was really cool, and got some good images of it. And then, you know, really the premise of this trip was to catch sturgeon out of a Hobie. And I'll tell you something, we fished that first couple of days, and I didn't, you know, I mixed it up with multi-species, but I fished for a few hours for sturgeon, and, you know, surprisingly, we didn't get much. And we got one sturgeon that Jason as well caught, about a 37 incher, a nice fish, but not under sturgeon. I mean, you know, what you can do here. And so then what we did is we sent the crew up to Birchdale, way up river. And, you know, the reason we did that, Brett, is because, you know, we saw a lot of minnow surfacing, and sturgeon are breaching or rolling all over, all around us, yet we couldn't catch them. I mean, we were fishing them on the bottom like you normally do, with a combination of night crawlers and pearls and shiners. So we thought, well, you know what? They must be feeding up in the water column because of the different bug hatches going on, and because of the minnows and stuff, and because they were up in the water column. We just couldn't get them. So we went to Birchdale, and some of the folks fished that, oh, you know, 8 to 10 feet of water where there's a little bit more current. Those fish are a little bit more condensed in a smaller area. And that was a ticket, because yesterday they got three of them. And they also got some walleyes and bass up there. But to your question, yeah, a sturgeon will pull around a Hobie.
I bet that it will. What did you catch any walleyes out of one, Joe?
Oh, yeah, I did. Yep. I pulled kind of the edge of that channel. You know, it's funny because people talk about the Rainy River in the summer that there's no walleyes. And really, the truth be known, you know, majority of the walleyes will go out to the lake, I think, in the summer. But there's always a resident population of walleyes in the Rainy River. So I put on a crawler harness, and I just pulled an edge in about 8 to 12 feet of water just along the riverbank going up into 4 Mile Bay. And you know what? I got some nice walleyes. They were probably 15 to 17 inches. I got, you know, I don't know, probably half dozen of them. And that's, you know, catching a walleye, taking time to do a nice photo, you know, opportunity, and making sure that we get, you know, the kayak in there correctly and the nice angle of the walleye. You know how that goes. I mean, it takes time.
Right.
If I would have kept on going back and forth over some spots that I was catching fish, I know I could have, you know, really smoked them. They weren't big fish. They were just eaters, but still nice eaters, 15 to 17.
Sure.
And then, you know, and I'll tell you, Brett, so fishing the Rainy River and 4 Mile Bay the last couple of days, we caught walleyes, saugers, sturgeon, pike of all sizes, bunch of smallmouth bass, some nice perch, caught a 15-inch crappie on a crankbait, and we even caught a seal pout.
Wow.
Which you don't catch those in the summer. You get them in the winter. You know?
Sure. Right. So for anybody listening right now that says, what the heck is a Hobie? Is there some pictures they can see online from all these activities?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, in fact, if you go to the Lake Elwood Tourism Facebook page, otherwise I wrote a blog and actually I did a video. So you can go to our website at Lake of the Woods Tourism and check out blogs. And I have a blog in there that I actually have a video where I'm sitting in one. And then I got pictures of Jason holding up his big pike and Barb Carey and Jody Ray and Paul Johnson caught nice sturgeon. Jason Hauser got a nice sturgeon. We got some bass photos. So I got a bunch of stuff in there just to kind of show them off a little bit. But I got to tell you, man, I was really impressed. You know, I couldn't believe how much fun I had in that Hobie. And,
sure.
You know, even going back in 4 Mile Bay, that's a big area of water. That's anywhere from 4 to 7 feet of water. And nobody goes back there. Really, nobody does. And, you know, we went back there and just went hunting, casting spinnerbaits, kind of a search lure. We got good fish. It was fun. It was exciting. Some of the folks that worked the banks of the Rainy River and caught some nice pike. One nice walleye that was in the slot, probably a 21-incher. It's kind of cool because how often do you do that? Heck, you come to Lake of the Woods, you go walleye fishing, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. LakeOfTheWoodsMN.com, the website. You can go see some of the see the blog, the video, and some more pictures. Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio here talking about Lake of the Woods. And this weekend, Saturday of this weekend, it started on Friday. You have another tournament up there.
AIM Walleye Weekender Series has their Minnesota Championship up at Lake of the Woods, you know, Friday and Saturday this week. And, you know, tell you what, there's been a lot of pre-fishing going on, a lot of really good anglers. And, you know, that AIM format is that catch photo release. So what they'll do is they'll get out there with a bump board, like a judge, and one of the partners has a digital camera. And what they'll do is they'll take one shot of the walleye on a ruler, on a judge. They'll take a second shot of that same walleye as kind of a hero shot so they can identify the markings on the side, which prevents you from using that fish twice. And then once you know you have those two photos in the bag that they turned out okay, you let that fish go and you record your length on a card. At the end of the day, you bring in your card with the top five fish circled, and then the judges will go through your SD card that you turn in. And
oh, cool.
It's really kind of a neat way to have a tournament because it preserves the fish. The fish are going back into the water, you know, a 25 or 26 inch fish, which, you know, you have to let go in Lake of the Woods because it's in that 19 and a half to 28 inch protected slot. That fish actually counts in a catch, record, release tournament because you are releasing it. So it really, instead of looking for, you know, that fish over 28 along with 19 inchers, you really are looking for the biggest fish in the system, period.
Yeah, that's great.
It is great, isn't it? Yeah, it feels good to let. I'll tell you, as an angler, I fished that format before. It feels good to take a nice, big, healthy walleye, make sure you got your photos correctly, and put that fish back and watch it swim away healthy.
Yeah,
it's nice that we don't have to do live well management, where you're making sure that your fish are alive, and maybe you need to clip on those ice fishing sinkers on their pectoral fins to keep them upright in your live well so they live, and you constantly got to check them and keep running water. And it's just kind of neat to do it that way.
Absolutely. Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, coming up next week on the show. Joe, we can talk about your Pay It Forward event, the veterans event that you do up there annually on Lake of the Woods. How many years have you been doing that now?
This is year five for us.
Year five. Very cool. Well, we want to find out a little bit more about that and how people can get involved with that as well. But if anyone listening wants to go find out more about, Lake of the Woods, planning a trip yet this summer, this fall, or this winter, an ice fishing trip, or see those pictures in the video of the Hobie kayaks, where should they go, Joe?
Yeah, check out our website. I'll tell you what, man, the fish are biting. The fish are still biting good. Very consistent bite. Check out our website. It's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Well, we're in North Dakota chasing geese of the early Canada goose season, waterfowl season right around the corner. You want to make sure that your gun is clean and in working condition. Bill Cashmark has some tips for you next on Sporting Journal Radio.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bidette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey, it's Brett Amundson from Sporting Journal Radio and Prairie Sportsman. And if you want to hunt with us this fall, you can. We'll be guiding duck and goose hunts all over western Minnesota around the Lac qui Parle area. Lac qui Parle is known for its goose hunting, and this year should be no different. And with the wet conditions we've had, the ducks are everywhere. If you want to find out more information, go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. We've got pictures, videos, more information about what you need to bring and what the rates are. Visit midmigrationoutfitters.com.
Listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
Hi, this is Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network. We're actually on a location right now, and these are the fun ones when I get to go cool places because I'm surrounded by guns and things that fix guns right now. And Bill Cashmark, we're at Cashmark's Gun and Reel in Montevideo. All right, how long have you been here?
I've been here for 27, going on 28 years now. So,
how many broken guns do you think you've seen in your lifetime?
Couldn't even imagine. After the business built up and stuff, it's gotten to be like about at least 500 guns a year. And some of them are just quick, easy fixes. Some of them come in and leave with the gun. Sometimes they have to leave them overnight, sometimes for a week, sometimes for several months, because it's weather dependent upon when I can do bluing and refurbishing. You don't want to get the metal bare and leave it exposed to the humidity like we have this time of the year in August, because the metal has to sit there for about two days to a week, waiting to get into the bluing tanks. So minimal rust can start in that amount of time. So I like to do that stuff in the fall, and in late fall and midwinter is the best, because I can't go trolling in my boat in the winter time. So and being an old guy, it's getting too cold out there for me in the winter time. So I'm in here in the shop usually 6-7 days a week.
Well, I want to talk to you about fixing guns and gun repair, some of the worst guns you've ever had somebody bring into you. Don't talk about my gun. I know my gun's going to come up in this conversation, but I want to hear about some of the worst examples of guns that you had come in here, and also offer some tips on what people can do for gun care at home and what they can do and things like that. And you always recommend get your gun into a place like yours and get it cleaned.
Well, one of the biggest mistakes that people made is the minute their gun begins to malfunction, they'll start dumping oil in it. And one of the little quirks I have when people come in, I'll open up the gun and take a look inside, and I'll look at the guy quizzically and say, "Well, where's the filter?" And he looks at me and he says, what do you mean? And he says, "Well, there's 5 quarts in here. There's got to be a filter somewhere." it's the worst thing you can do there is don't dump too much oil in. Oil just attracts and collects dust and dirt in the gun.
That's always the fix when you're laying out there in the field and your gun jams up or gets dry. Oh, give me that rim oil or whatever and just start spraying it down.
Just a couple of drops on the slide rail and where you can see the internals go back and forth, your breech bolt and your locking block, just a couple drops on them, and on the slide bar assemblies on some automatics have them, and some most pumps do have slide bars, and that's about the only place you need to lube them other than the outside. When you put them away to store them for the winter, just clean them up or have me clean them up and store them. And if you're going to be in a atmosphere that does have moisture in it, if you do a lot of cooking in the house, one thing I found that's an excellent preservative in the bore on rifles or shotguns is bore butter. I don't know why, but it works extremely well as a preservative. And I use Brake Free to do all my lubrication. It's a good synthetic lubricant. Works well, doesn't seize up and bind up your gun in the winter. Some of the silicones will. They don't have the same properties that Brake Free does.
Bill Cashmark, our guest here, Sporting Journal Radio. We're at Cashmark's Gun and Reel right now talking about keeping your gun clean when you're getting ready for the waterfowl season or putting it away for storage or deer hunting or whatever hunting you like to do. Let's talk about my Beretta for one second.
And because I'll never forget the look on your face when you watched me bring it in and you started breaking it open and taking a look at it. It was a little dirty, wasn't it?
No, it was worse beyond. It was way beyond dirty.
Oh, come on now.
It wasn't the worst one I've seen, but I usually do that to some people that have extremely dirty ones. I'll tell them I should have charged by the acre to clean it because they do come in. I've opened up surprisingly guns, though, that were, like, say, for instance, Model 12 Winchesters. They were built new in probably the 20s. They haven't been opened up since they were new. 97 Winchesters, they haven't been opened up since they were new.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just impacted, and they're solid and stuff, and surprisingly, they still function. Not well, but they do function. Probably the integrity of these old guns that were built into them from the factory.
Well, to be fair, the spring snow goose season is extremely brutal on those guns. I'm just making excuses now, because I have had my gun cleaned and tried to keep it clean, but there's certain situations where you get into where you're just going to get a lot of mud and dirt in there, and it's real important to bring it in and get it professionally cleaned when you do that.
Yeah, it helps, because there are internal things that a lot of people aren't familiar with or aren't comfortable with, I should say, into taking apart. Primarily the semi-autos and stuff, and rifles or shotguns. Handguns, there's some of those are in the same situation. They're not comfortable taking them apart. And I've had guns come in pails and in bags and in baskets. And I even have somebody's Tupperware back there that someone brought their gun in. So if you take it apart now and it's not working right, be reminded it's going to cost you more, because then I have to put it back together to see what's not working and then take it all apart again. So,
sure. Bill Cashmark, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, Cashmark's Gun and Reel here in Montevideo. You took my gun apart. You cleaned it up, worked great, and then I brought it back out and did some hunting with it and ended up blowing the threads out of it. Have you seen that type of thing happen before?
Very seldom. I don't know, Brett, if you were using 3.5 inches at that time or not, but when you get these extended tubes on your magazine, the spring tension is extreme, and when you're shooting rapidly and with heavier loads, the inertia from those shells just puts a lot of strain on the magazine tube, and in the case of your gun, it just tore the end of the magazine tube right off in the thinnest part, of course, where the threads are cut in. And that's unavoidable. The only thing I did with your gun is I did put in a somewhat lighter spring, which I think will be sufficient to feed the ammunition. I did give you your old spring back, so if it didn't function properly there, you can just put the long one in again. But then I'll have to order another magazine tube.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, right. Well, I'll tell you, we had a tough spring season this year, and we were finally getting into birds, and it was some of the best hunting we'd had all spring, and yeah, it was all 3-inch shells, but I was firing them off as fast as I could load them and as fast as I could shove them in that magazine tube. So but you got her fixed, and we get to take her out next week into North Dakota for the early Canada goose season, so thank you very much for that. Now I want to talk about some other repairs you've had to do. You talked about seeing guns come in Tupperware containers. What's one of the worst guns you've seen come into your shop here?
I've had some that were so neglected that they couldn't be repaired. I in that case, and some of them that are actually unsafe to shoot, then I'll possibly buy them from the customer if he wants for as a parts gun, and there are probably some are internal parts that I could use, but sometimes they're not. Some of the very worst ones I've had. In fact, I'm working on one now that's not quite good. It was so rusty that the action wouldn't open up. I had one come in that was still in the box, new. The stock was so rotten that I couldn't even use the gun, or the stock. I had to replace the stock. I did get the action freed up. Those usually end up, if I can, I re-blew them and refurbish the stock, refit new wood to them. And that's pretty much it. You'll get, there are all kinds of cases. And people should be aware, too, if you're still running around with Grandpa's old full choke gun and you're going to shoot coarser shot, coarser than twos or coarser, you know, through that full choke, you should get the choke opened up. What happens is when that coarse shot hits the constriction of this choke, even with the plastic wad on the outside, it'll put bulges on the barrel. I've seen cases of where it's actually bulged the barrel so much it popped the rib loose. So that's one thing to be aware of. Other than that, I guess, just normal use and wear. And if you wipe them down when you put them away, that's about all you should have to do. And you don't have to, unless you, like Brett, and use them a lot. And in your severe cases, you don't even need to get them cleaned every year. Most boot shooters or people in boots that walk in here, their gun hasn't been exposed to that much stuff. You may have some weed seeds and stuff are inside there, but for the most part, just if you don't over-oil them, it'll operate fine. And every couple years is sufficient for most hunters.
Bill Cashmark, our guest, and I've got a question, another question about cleaning. So we'll pull our guns apart usually at least once a year, maybe a couple of times a year, just to give them a quick cleaning at home, and we'll pull the trigger assembly out and everything. When it comes to a part like that, how do you recommend somebody at home cleaning it?
I would just say if you have solvent, use solvent on it of some kind, something that dries out quickly. And then if and I believe there are some of them now, and I should get some in stock here, that are pressurized scrubbers. And I think they have a solvent in them that does dry out quickly. Don't try to take the trigger assembly apart. There's too many pieces in there that can go in backwards, not get in there, you'll lose a spring. I see all kinds of that, so I wouldn't pull that apart. Check your gas system on the front of the magazine tube on a lot of the gas-operated shotguns, because those will have a lot of carbon build up on the magazine tube, and there's a piston in there, and that piston has to ride back and forth on the magazine tube. If that carbon gets built up too much, and unfortunately it's some of the modern or newer ammo that's out there, it really gets built up a lot. And then that will cause the gun to malfunction because the piston can't slide back or forward. If you go out and try to shoot the gun and people come in and they'll say, well, it won't go off now. That's because the piston didn't go far enough forward, so therefore the slide bar didn't go far enough forward, and the trigger mechanism will not release until it's all the way closed. So, and there's one way you can check that. If you push on the operating handle on your semi-autos on the outside, if you can push it forward after the gun locks up, you got a problem up front.
Well, keep your gun clean. Better yet, bring it into Bill here, have him clean it for you. And you've got some new guns that you sell here. I saw a Super Black Eagle too, I think, that you got here for sale. And then you do some guns on consignment too?
I do quite a few on consignment, or if the people want, I can just buy them outright from them too. Either way, it doesn't matter to me. So, yep, sure do.
All right, and give us that address one more time.
That's 1332 Benson Road, Montevideo. And one more thing, just take good care of your dog, because when you're in the field, he's the hunter. You're just the shooter.
Oh, we could have a whole nother show talking about dogs, I think, Bill.
Oh, yes.
Bill Cashmark, Cashmark's Gun and Reel, Montevideo. Thanks for the time here on Sporting Journal Radio.
Thank you for stopping in, Brett.
You've been listening to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors, on the Sporting Journal Radio Network. To listen to this show again, get the latest hunting and fishing news and more, visit sportingjournalradio.com.